The world isn't wide enough. Get immersed in the expansive views of the 48-inch customizable panoramic display in the all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid. Explore more at Lincoln.com. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
If he kicks this, he can shave whichever part of his body he wants.
To another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. While the Welsh sporting world is mourning or remembering the fabulous exploits of Gareth Bale, we have got to move on and talk about Welsh regional rugby. But that said, I don't think it was that bad a weekend, personally. And here with me to pick the bones out of it is the Mighty Murph.
Evening.
And back by popular demand, join us for the second week on The Spin. It's Dive Sports, Harry Corrish. How are you, Harry?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Right, so tonight's show, we are going to be, as I say, reviewing the rugby from the weekend. And one man who was watching that with a close eye was Warren Gatland. And, of course, he will be naming his squad very, very shortly. So what better opportunity for us to do exactly the same thing in our famous, infamous, or run-of-the-mill selection specials. We'll be putting on the old selection blazers, the committee blazers, and filling the room full of Rothman cigarettes in order to come up with a conclusive 35-man squad. So we'll be doing that in the second half of the show, but first, let's take a look back at the action from the weekend. I think the best place to start is the Cardiff versus Scarlets game, because as you put it before we came on air, Murph, that was the most exciting one.
Yeah, the other two were kind of underperforming aspects of the Ospreys game and the Dragons game, whereas this Scarlets Cardiff game was quite pulsating, and I think a lot of youngsters who haven't really yet made an impression internationally stood out, and so that made it even more interesting for me, because the likes of Joe Roberts, I'm going to get someone's name wrong now, Cowan Tupulotu, Mason Grady, all featured a lot, and that's unusual. We seem to have had the same crop of players performing for quite a long time, really, around Wales. So it's unusual and exciting, because it shows Kieran Williams had a, he's not young anymore, he's 25, but he had a great weekend, and he's in a great run of form anyway. So, people are putting their hands up, and it's, in a way, it's like the ones who haven't been touted so much, because up to now it's been like the Max Llewellyn kind of Smoking Joe kind of crowd, and it was a different crop altogether, really.
Yeah, it was. Who caught your eye in that game, Harry?
Yeah, there were a few good performances. I thought Blacker put his hand up once again. He was excellent. The Tongan boys at Scarlets were just ridiculous. Some of the ball handling skills is just sublime. I thought Petrel looked good. He played well. And Bowater was good off the base of the scrum as well. So, yeah, as Murph has just said, it's been an exciting kind of time, really, with the youngsters coming in, and they're all coming into form at the right time.
They are, and obviously, as we say, the narrative starts to change at this point in the season because you have got that Six Nations squad looming. So it's great to see a number of players put their hands up, and as Murph says, some youngsters who might be ones for the longer term future. But that said, we were saying last week, pressure on Dwayne Peel had eased a bit after that win over the Dragons. This, however, was a completely different performance in terms of its kind of overall ability, I think. And do you think this is them starting to turn the corner, Murph?
I'm not sure if it could be a combination of two, that the bubble has burst on this run of form from Cardiff, for sure. You know, the December they had was outstanding, and they've gone back-to-back losses against their nearest rivals, which I suppose is what Welsh derbies will do to you. It reminds me of the Welsh lobster joke. I must have said the Welsh lobster joke before, where a guy goes out fishing with a Welsh lobster fisherman, and as he's pulling in the pots, one of the lobsters is escaping. As he's escaping, he warns the fisherman, and the fisherman says, "Don't worry, they're Welsh lobster. He'll soon drag him down." And that's a little bit like Cardiff's form. They were going well, and then the referee said, "Oh, you think you're good, do you?" And they battered him up front, and then they were going well into this game. Well, they were going well up until the Scarlets, and the Scarlets just ran him ragged in a way, especially in the first half an hour. And that bubble's burst, and I think going into Europe now, they'll have to be careful because those games were easy first time round, but the opposition might have had a look at him now, and it could easily. Liam Williams came back and went and disappeared again. Their form could easily disappear down a hole, I think.
Yeah, I'm presuming that Liam Williams went off with that massive shiner on his face, didn't he? So I'm guessing that was the reason for the injury. I would imagine that's probably not too much of a long term concern, is it, Harry?
No, you wouldn't have thought so. Looked quite kind of innocuous, really. And he should be back fairly soon, you would have thought.
A couple of refereeing decisions, as we always have to get stuck into. Two yellow cards brandished by Joy Neville for head collision incidences, one on each side. Do you think she got those calls right, Harry?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's just part of the game now, you can't really get away from it. I think they're trying to stamp out that kind of tackle, really. I think it's fair enough.
And you, Murph?
Yeah, well, the mitigation on the Tamani one was the guy was dropping to the ground when he hit him. I didn't see the other one as clearly. It's a very hot topic this weekend because of Owen Farrell's tackle, which again went unpunished. He's been cited though, so that's going to be a big story over the next few weeks, because if you're cited, it's sort of 6 weeks is the minimum, which makes him miss the start of the Six Nations, obviously. So it would be interesting to see what excuse the disciplinary panel come up with for reducing it below the minimum to make sure he's available for the games in Twickenham next month.
Yeah, I mean, the inconsistencies on these things, like you say, it should be pretty straightforward that it's a 6 week minimum for getting cited, but every single time there seems to be some way of kind of weaseling out when it comes to
especially for tier one nations who are very heavily represented on all the boards all over the world. So
yeah, exactly. So we'll wait and see what happens with that. But you're right, it is a hot topic again. The Tamani one for me, I think, to be fair, based on the current directives, the referee got them right that is a mitigation. But Tamani one was a nasty tackle, I think. And I don't know, I've said this numerous times on here, but I think they're the ones, if you're genuinely trying to stamp it out, you've just got to get rid of them. And would it have been a harsh red card in the current climate? Yes. Is it better to just completely eradicate any of those? Yes. Whereas the other one was at a snail's pace. It was a head collision, but it was at a very, very slow pace. And I just think that's the thing that, you know, rather than, oh, well, he was dipping a little bit, I don't know. I think you've almost got to kind of just get out of the way of it. But
yeah, I think there's some head-high tackles where the tackler is almost on tiptoes. Yeah. And in Tamari's defence, he was very hinged at the waist. You know,
you're right.
Yeah. And some of them, you know, they're actually standing up into the tackle, and that's when they end up catching someone in the face with their shoulder or whatever. And I think those ones should be clamped on, because if you're standing up at a tackle, you're very likely to catch someone high. Whereas if you hinge, you know, he's almost bent at 90 degrees to Manny. If you're doing that, then at least you know the intent is not there. If the guy falls, then it's still not ideal. But just get everyone bent down low to start with, and go from there. At the moment, it's the ones where you catch him in the face and you haven't even tried to go low at all, like a little bit like Owen Farrell.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And then let's take a look at the other games, because you said there, you know, perhaps the Ospreys game wasn't a spectacle, but on paper, what was it, 10 minutes to go, leading against Leinster with a good few internationals going. This run of good form seems to continue, Harry, doesn't it, for the Ospreys, even though it's a loss against Leinster in a way is like a loss against the All Blacks, really, isn't it, or peak All Blacks.
Yeah, the Leinster are a fantastic team, haven't lost this season. But I think it's those key areas which were obviously a big thing in this game. I think Ospreys really fronted up at the beginning. Their pack was phenomenal, as per usual. I thought they really set the tone at the beginning with the Nicky Smith taking Ala Alatoa up into the air, and the crowd were right behind them, and I think that really set the tone, really. Struggling a little bit with the back line with those changes after Protherall went off. But in the final third again, I think their back line didn't really fire. They couldn't find a way. I'm not saying their defence is phenomenal, but they do need to improve in that area. But it's the same old kind of things. Set piece was exceptional. You can't fault that. And it's just those final little bits, really.
How do you assess it, Murph? Good performance or missed opportunity?
The reason I said it was a dull, not dull game, a duff game, is because I thought that looked like a rare off day for Leinster when they arrived. They weren't anywhere near full strength, and it looked like they were having a duff game for me. And I thought the Ospreys had got themselves into a winning position. And I think, and I know I'm kind of singling him out on a regular basis now, but I think if Owen Williams was playing, they go on to win that game. There was a turning point midfield. Jack Walsh just flung a ball at Alwyn Jones, nowhere near his hands. And Leinster picked up from there, never really looked back. It seemed to just spark him into life. And it was just a wishy-washy pass. And you can't, there's probably positions where you can afford to be a little bit loose, but half-back is not that position. You can do it, and I think I feel like I'm singling the guy out, because he has got ability, but Jack Walsh has just got to tidy up on the details in his game. I thought Ospreys, the reason I was disappointed in that game is because I thought they were in a winning position there, and I thought the heads dropped a little bit with the amount of errors that started creeping in, and you lost the intensity, and that's when Leinster just sort of swarmed back into it. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned there that it's another big performance up front, and I've no doubt that a large amount of those players are going to feature when it comes to us selecting our squad in the second half. Before we do that, though, we have to talk about another Dragons defeat. With this one, I felt after 10 minutes, I thought, oh God, here we go. This is going to be a 50 pointer. And then there was a weird point where the Dragons gave me a bit of hope of getting back into it. Harry, how do you look at this one? Is this another game where they've drifted off for too big a chunk of it to be able to compete? Or is this again a sign that things are improving, that they're able to compete with a side as powerful as the Bulls?
Yeah, I think the start of the game really showed where they were lacking, really. I think there's key positions where if they lose one or two players, they're left wanting, I think. I think that then after that yellow card, they really got into the game a bit. They started showing their what they want to do, the quick hands and everything in the back, so that started to become exciting. And I think that showed where they were. I think the scrum is an issue. I think they really it really caused it. I know the Bulls have got an excellent scrum, but I think the two props starting props are giving away some of the most penalties in the URC at the moment. So it's a huge issue. And without that set piece up front, then I don't think you can do much behind it. But there were some good performances in there. I thought George Knott was excellent. He's really come back with a bang. And even Max Clark as well. I think he had a good game as well.
Yeah, I think looking at those players who've come in over the summer, largely speaking, they've enhanced the squad. Murph, we always talk about, you know, kind of upgrades, don't we? And it feels like the players that they have brought in over the summer have definitely meant that it's a stronger, that there is more strength in depth. But there's a couple of those key positions that if one or two players get injured, then it can really affect them, can't it?
Yeah, I'm really worried at the moment that they're lapsing back into last season's form at the moment, the last sort of three games. And I mean, that game against such a strong pack was always going to be the worst possible opposition for the Dragons to face. Mm. A running team, I think they can go toe-to-toe with, but that kind of scrummaging power is a big problem for the Dragons. I don't think they were helped by some of the errors through the spine of the team. It's 9, 10, 15, we're making a lot of errors throughout the game. So, and those things, unforced errors, is what made me think it looked like last season's form. Yeah. So I think, I don't know where the first choice guys are at the moment. Rodri Williams is on his way back, I think. Oh, but Bertrand, who came
off the bench. Yeah.
Yeah, they need to start again, I think. And obviously, a steadying sort of Hanrahan influence as well would help them. Because if you're not careful, like this can, with a side just only just kind of in the early stages of turning themselves around, the confidence can disappear quite quickly. Yeah. And so I think they need a lot of steadying influences in the side as quick as possible. And it would help if they're not playing a massive pack next time round.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the massive pack is, like, you're absolutely right there, boys. It's the scrum, I think, in particular. Like, yeah. At points, it felt like the Dragons were able to deal with the kind of the line-out threat, but it was the scrum that they couldn't deal with. Collisions and ball carrying, and even to a certain degree, breakdown wasn't bad. The defensive sets were generally quite good, I thought, but the thing that cost was decision making, really poor kicking game in the opening 10 minutes in particular, and that completely cost it. You know, loose kicks like that, you know, when you've got backline with people like Arenza in it, you know, for all the power up front, they've still got some sparkling runners in there, the Bulls, and it could have cost even more, I thought. But it'll be really interesting to see how the next few weeks go, because I think you're right, this is about stopping that rot now. And because if you go on a losing run or a winless run of 5, 6, 7, 8 games, it all of a sudden that confidence really does seep out of it. Mm. And those narrow defeats turn into big ones, and everything starts to erode away. So I think it's really important that they're able to get some wins, but you know, now and when the internationals are away.
In fairness, I thought what Di Flanagan said at some stage after the game was important, is about last year that side put 60 points on them. So you know, to come back from where they were after sort of 15 minutes and then be back in it was encouraging. It was just the way it fell off again after that concerned me. That's all. So hopefully it doesn't snowball out of control from here.
Yeah, fair point. Right, well, that will do us for the review of the weekend. Oh, I do have to say as well, two other performances that really caught my eye. Dan Davis for the Scarlets, just before we go to break. I thought that was a really good performance from him. And we're definitely going to talk about it, because I talk about him every week. But Faletau was just absolutely imperious, even in a losing cause. So, plenty more of this Faletau love in to come in the second half of the show. But first, we're going to have this quick break. Right, boys, just before we put the committee blazers on and start selecting our squads, I do want to look at the... Because we're less than a month away from the start of the tournament now, the coaching setup hasn't been finalised yet, but good friend of the show, Steph Thomas, ran an article today on the Wales Online talking about the most likely candidates to to fill those seats. So I'll just kind of talk you through those if you haven't seen it already. Mm-hmm. But Alex King looking like the front runner for the attack coach. Obviously someone who's got a little taste of Wales a few years back, wasn't he? Kind of dropped, was it 2013 or 2017? I think he came in and did that job on an interim basis. And again, lots of experience, coached at some big sides, coached out in France, coached with Gloucester. And given that he's kind of on a free at the moment, that doesn't feel like a bad appointment to me. What do you reckon, Murph?
It's the Wasp connection again, isn't it, with Gatland? And it must be, when you mentioned the year he was, it must have been in a Lions year when Gatland was away. I'm assuming Paul Gustard is the other option, or
he's defence coach.
Right, okay, that's confirmed, is it? I'm not sure if it's Gustard as in Bastard or Gustard as in custard.
I think I go Gustard as in custard.
Yeah, I prefer that.
Tackling the big issues as always.
Yeah. Well, again, with the Alex King thing, it depends. Is it a long-term appointment or is it just the World Cup? I think if on a interim basis, any of the appointments are ideal because it's just fresh voices and fresh ideas coming into the squad, who have had a lot of the same people for years on end, I think. I don't suppose he's the hottest property in the sport as an attack coach at the moment, but at the same time, you know, look, from the setup we've just come from, there's not an awful lot to beat, so I'm okay with it.
I would argue, Harry, as well, that the defence coach is a much more important appointment for Gatland, given the style of play that he's had in the past, given that it's Sean Edwards' boots that he needs to fill, and also the little amount of time that they're going to have as to really kind of influence an attacking style of play. I kind of argue really that getting that defensive system back in place is probably the more important appointment. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Obviously, it's the bedrock. If you can see points, you can't win games. You've got to start stopping that rot, really. I think it's very inconsistent over the last few months. I think they really need to step up now, and it is a big job. I think the Wales side hasn't been firing for a while. They'll be under pressure. With Gatland coming in, they want to do well. And I think with his style of play, you need to stop that kind of points being scored against you and try and nick a few games, build some confidence. And then you can start firing with the vast array of attacking talent that we've got.
And the thing for me, again, is that experience in that position. Again, you know, Gustard was, I almost said Gustard then as well. You've got inside my mind, MF. But yeah, Gustard, again, obviously was influential in that Saracen side in the kind of the early to mid 2010s. Had a coaching stint was in the England setup for a while. Had a coaching stint as head coach at Harlequins, which was I suppose is the one that's kind of damaged his reputation a bit. But as a defence coach, you know, I think his pedigree is really, really strong, and I'm hoping that's going to be proved right. The other kind of a point, obviously Jonathan Humphreys and Neil Jenkins staying on, and then the other one that looks as though it may well happen is Jonathan Thomas coming in as line out and contact skills coach. What do you make of that one, Murph?
Surprises me actually on top of Jonathan Humphreys, because I think he's done good job with the scrum and the driven line out. We've very rarely have a great line out, but we have actually got a driven maul now. So I'm a little bit surprised they've got someone over the top of Jonathan Humphreys in a way. But then they did that a little bit before with Sam Orban coming in as breakdown on top of Byron Hayward, which is kind of stealing his thunder a little bit. So, I mean, as long as it works between the coaches involved, I don't suppose it's a problem. Broadly speaking, I'm in favour of Jonathan Thomas. I like when I hear him interviewed on whatever, whether he's as a Worcester coach or just as a pundit, I always got a lot of time for what he says.
While we're on that topic, here's one for you, Harry. An ex-player turned coach who I've really enjoyed the punditry of lately is Mark Jones, and he's someone who's been kind of linked with this a bit. Do you think he's perhaps someone that was in the reckoning for either attack or defence? He's done both roles in the past.
Yeah, I'd have liked to have seen him in, to be honest. I think he's got good experience. He's been with the Crusaders with Scott Robertson, and yeah, obviously I enjoyed watching him back in the day down at the Scarlets. I think he's very impressive, the way he talks, that kind of thing. I think he's good in a few areas and that kind of thing, but I'd like to see him in amongst it. Maybe he hasn't got him now, but maybe one to look at for the future.
Yeah, and as you were saying there, Murph, with all of these appointments, you don't know how long they're actually going to be, because it might be that things are kind of all change after the World Cup, because it's kind of happened so late in the cycle. But anyway, we will see. One thing that everyone can be very, very grateful for is the fact that we are not selecting the squad. However, for the purposes of the next 20 minutes or so, that will be exactly what we're doing. I feel like we're perhaps an upgrade on what Wayne Pivak's selections were, but probably a downgrade on where will be.
We're trying not to pick anyone who's definitely haven't played or trained for months on end.
Is injured and hasn't trained for 3 months.
Yeah.
Hopefully we won't make those mistakes. Let's start as we always do, though, with the props. And I'm going to come to you, Murph, because I need you to get your Reece Carey fanboyness out of the way first, so we've got time to talk about the other 34 positions.
Okay. Well, I would have him in my squad. He until Nicky Smith's recent form, I think Reece Carey was the standout loose head in the country throughout most of the autumn and across Christmas. Like I said, he's the heaviest carrier in the country. Nicky Smith is a good carrier, but he's using his footwork, and Reece Carey is not using footwork. So he's a different option, and I would probably, just because of the way he scrummaged in South Africa, I would also keep Gareth Thomas in the squad. So that would be my three.
I can't disagree with that. They would absolutely be my three. Anything more to add there, Harry?
No, definitely not. I put them down as my three. Very impressive and nice few different options there.
They kind of all offer something different, really, don't they? Gareth Thomas very much a scrummaging loose head. Reece Carey very much in the loose, and Nicky Smith is kind of a bit of all plus a bit of breakdown stuff in there as well. So it does feel like the number one shirt's got some good options there. When it comes to tight head, there's probably one clear runner in terms of Tom Francis. You'd have to say Dylan Lewis on kind of recent international form as well. When it comes to the third, I'm fresh out of ideas here. Who would you be looking at, Harry?
Two of the boys of the Scarlets have really impressed me. I really enjoyed watching Harry O'Connor from way back from watching him at Llandovery from a youngster. He's always taken his challenges. I remember him coming to Aberavon, and Aberavon got one of the best scrums in the Indigo Premiership under Mark Brees, former Cardiff Blues player. And he really took on the experienced guys, and I just stood back and just admired him. Just his ball was really there, but he's an excellent in the loose as well. I think he's an option. Obviously, you've got Sam Wainwright. I haven't seen too much of him, really. I know he's just started getting into the Scarlet squad now. That is the decision to make with the props, I think. Obviously, you've got Thomas Francis. Dylan Lewis, hopefully he'll be okay. He's just coming back from an injury. But it's definitely a problem. A difficult selection there.
Yeah, I mean, while we're talking Scarlets as well, sorry, Murph, just before we come to you there, I suppose Will Griff-John had been something of a disappointing signing until recently, actually. I would say his kind of last couple of performances have given us a glimpse of what I think people were hoping for. Is he someone who could be in with a shout, Murph?
I'm struggling to even remember who the three tight ends were in the autumn. It would have been Dylan, Tom, and I can't remember who the third one was. It wasn't Leon Brown, was it?
No, Leon's been injured virtually the whole season. I think it must have been Wainwright, I would have thought. but he didn't get close to
no,
because he went to South Africa, didn't he?
Did yeah, but that was because there was no tight ends left in the country at that stage, and then he had a good tour. Just going slightly off topic, they're suddenly very well off for tight ends down in the Scarlets. You know, Javen Sebastian played well on the thing, and then you've got Will Griff John, then you've got Samway, and then you've got Heidegger. That's more depth than any of the regions at the moment, the three. I don't know. Like we mentioned, Dylan Lewis hasn't played. If he doesn't turn out in either of these European games now, you'd probably have to pick him anyway. But you're really struggling then if he's unavailable, because I'm not sure. Based on recent selection, obviously this is a different regime now altogether, but you'd probably go Sam Wainwright as his third choice and hope Dylan Lewis is fit again.
Anything to be said for Tom Botha in all of this now? Welsh qualified over the summer.
He's had his best performances for the Ospreys in the last few weeks, but I still don't think it's enough to... He's not actually... first time I saw him in the flesh was New Year's Day. He's not actually the most athletic of tight ends, should we say. But that's putting it politely as I can.
Okay, all right. Well, let's... before I get embroiled into this... this feud with an international or a professional tight head prop. I'll leave that to you. I'm gonna say right. Tom Francis and Dylan Lewis. We're gonna take a punt on. Out of those options, I would probably just go Wainwright. I think because of the experience. But thinking back to the autumn, I think he did play and he had a rough time in one of those games. But but I'd probably just go for him. Harry, where are you going?
It's a difficult one, but yeah, I'd probably go Wainwright as well. I did like to mention Harry O'Connor there, because I think he'll be good for the future, but maybe not quite yet. But yeah, Sam Wainwright is an interesting one.
Happy with that, Murph?
Yeah, well, we're limited, especially if Dylan Lewis is not available. It's going to get really awkward then, but hopefully he's fit.
Fair enough. Right, on to hookers. There's probably four candidates here, I would say, in Ken Owens, Ryan Elias, Dowie Lake, and Bradley Roberts. Who are your three, Murph? Let's go to you first.
I would stick with the, now that Dowie Lake's fit, I would stick with the three that were kind of the dominant ones last year, which is Elias, Owens, and Lake. But I suspect this could be a position where Gatland's guillotine comes out and someone's career gets a little bit foreshortened.
Really? Are we thinking, what are you thinking, Ken?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm.
That's very, very interesting. What do you reckon, Harry? Because obviously he's one of Gatland's trusted lieutenants. He's been there a huge amount, you know, never really taken a backward step for him. He's taken him on Lions tours. Do you think, sentiment has never stopped him in the past. Do you think that this could be the end for Ken Owens?
Listen, I don't want to. I want to be able to enter Carmarthen safely.
yeah, last time I was there was 2019, so I think I'm going to be okay.
But yeah, it's a possibility. I don't know. I was really impressed with Bradley Roberts up against the Scarlets, up against Ken. I thought he had a great game there, and he really put him under pressure. So I'm really liking the look of Bradley Roberts. I think he's taken a leadership role at the Dragons as well. And if you're looking a bit further on as well, you need to get some experience, I think.
Interesting. So yeah, I mean, I think Gats will stick with Ken Owens. He's only got to get him through till the World Cup, and I think Ken will have more than enough to offer there. So I would go for Ken Owens, and I think he will as well. Dowie Lake for me is the long term successor, and I think he's going to fit the Gatland mould superbly. Big, physical.
First choice, athletic. I think. For Gatland.
First choice.
I think so.
First, quite possibly. I think he's a future Welsh captain as well. While we're at it, I think he's an excellent, excellent player. And then of Elias and Roberts, I mean, I've been so impressed with Roberts at the Dragons, you know, and even when things have been falling apart around him, he is one of those players just stands up and gets stuck in all aspects of his game. I just wonder, given the weakness at tight head, whether we're going to need to go for all of our best scrummaging options. And with that in mind, I think Ryan Elias is the better option there. So it's very unlucky, but I would just sneak with Elias on this one, I think. So that would be the deciding vote on that one. Second row is interesting. So I suppose you can't really talk about the second row without talking about the back row with it as well, because it depends if you've got a couple of hybrid players into the mix. I would say what we're going to need here is five second row options and six back row, but there may be a couple who cross over. Let's come to you first on this one, Harry. Who do you think would be the kind of the shoe-ins in the second row?
Well, you can't look further than Adam Beard and Alan Wynn. I think they both played well for the Ospreys. You can't go away from there. I think you've got a tough decision now. I was impressed with George Knott, so I think he'll be a name that will be mentioned at least. But then Rhys Davies, I've been very impressed with. Solid, hasn't missed a tackle this season. He gives that grunt in up front. And then obviously David Jenkins is another name. Very exciting, but I'm not too sure whether it's a bit soon for him.
Yeah, there is the kind of the latest on Ben Carter as well seems to be that he is going to be fit. I think his form has suffered a little bit this season and has been interrupted by injury. So I kind of wonder, and he spent most of the autumn carrying tackle bags as well, which I don't think helps. So I think that's probably going to put pay to this campaign. But his first season was absolutely outstanding. So I think he'll be back, but I don't think he's going to be in and amongst this one. Agree. I think Adam Beard, Alan Wynn are absolutely nailed on. Rhys Davies is a player I would definitely like to see in there. Murph, what have you made of him this season?
Yes, I heard a rumour around the way on New Year's Day that Alan Wynn was no longer considered first choice at the Ospreys with Rhys Davies' form. But he's still been on the pitch all the time of late. I think Rhys Davies is carrying a knock or something because he's not starting many games. And I think if Will Rowlands was fit, I think this is another position where we could have seen a legend getting called off by Gatland just to send out a message more than anything else.
I think we disagree on this one, mate. I think after the World Cup there will be.
Clearly there's going to be retirements, but the way Gatland seems to make a point of leaving people stranded on, you know, the Jamie Roberts, the Martin Williams, the Adam Joneses, he likes to make everyone feel like they're not safe in the squad at all times. And I just think with the amount of young second rows you just mentioned, you two have just mentioned between you, you know, Rhys Davies, Seb Davies, George Knott, David Jenkins, Ben Carter, Christian Zeru, he thinks he's a six, but we'll see. And can definitely do six or four, but with all those players come through, that's another position where Gatland could easily send out a message and just call someone. But I think with Will Rowlands being out long-term, I don't think it'll happen now. So I agree with everyone you've mentioned. Probably...
What about Seb Davies?
I think so. Because Will Rowlands is not there, and I think maybe George Knott gets in ahead of David Jenkins just because he's got more experience. But at the same time, I mean, the thing is with George Knott, David Jenkins now, is he's being capped, so they can safely not pick him for a while without worrying about him being picked up over the border. From a while ago, looking troublesome with only three tidy second rows in the squad. Now, with so many of them playing well, it's less of a problem. So I'm not that. I'll give whatever you two decide, I'm happy to go with.
It's good. We're about 13 minutes into this conversation and Murph's already lost his energy.
No, is it? Are we picking five or four?
I think we're saying, well, probably five, unless you really want that.
It's four, maybe four and Shuns are in the back row.
I think that's probably the answer. And with that in mind, Adam Beard, Alan Wynn, Rhys Davies, I'd say certainly would be my three. Mm-hmm. And then it's either you go Dav Jenkins or Seb Davies.
Well, it was. It was
Yeah, I haven't seen a huge amount of Dav Jenkins to go on.
He played for Exeter last week in a good game, played well, came off early-ish though. But the issue with Seb Davis, of course, was Wayne Pivac didn't fancy him. But does Gatland feel the same way about him? I'm not sure. So he's having. Well, I think
he's not picking him at number eight. I think
he's having a good season. I think for Cardiff.
Yeah, and I think he's doing a lot more of that. The thing leveled at him is always the nuts and bolts stuff. Can he do the grunt work? And I think he can. You know, he seems bigger to me. Mm. And I don't know that off the top of my head.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's stats, one. But... I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the heaviest players in the squad if picked, because he's a very heavy set bloke. You know, there's not many bigger players in the country than Seb Davis.
What I would say for Dav Jenkins is he's probably that little bit unexposed. So part of me wonders whether Gatland wants to have a good look at him. Mm. I think he knows what he's getting with Seb Davis. You know, he's picked him in a number of squads. He's had him there, as we said, experimented with positions a bit, but he kind of knows what Seb Davis can do. I wonder whether he wants to have a really good look and run the rule over Dav Jenkins as much as anything from like a character point of view.
Yeah.
You know, I think that goes a long way with Gatland. It's like, look, if I really push you to breaking point, how are you going to respond? Because they're the kind of players he wants. Mm. So I would be tempted to maybe just go for Dav Jenkins on this one. What about you, Harry?
Yeah, I think so. I think Seb Davis has worried me a little bit with his discipline this season, especially when the going gets tough. And like with Dav Jenkins for the future, maybe that is a good point. And he has really stood up in that Exeter team. There's a lot of big names around him, a lot of experience, and I think he's developing really nicely. I think he had put in some big performances in Europe as well, and yeah, I think I could see him going in there.
All right, yeah, let's go with that then. Beard, Davis, Alan Wynne-Jones, Jenkins and Schunzer as a second row / back row. God, right, which brings us on to the back row. It's like, how many sevens can you manage to get into this side? And that's a big part for me. I think we said it before, Murph, having the kind of the old cliche of balance in the back row has never been more important. So let's get your thoughts, Murph, on the candidates for the six spot at the moment.
Schunzer, Moriarty for me.
I like that. Like that a lot.
Yeah.
Harry?
Yeah, I'd like those two and possibly Morgan Morris as cover. He can play at six, possibly. Six.
Interesting. I mean, we've got to talk about Morgan Morris, actually, because I've been, I'd say, I find myself more and more impressed every time I see him. I feel like I've definitely been converted into thinking he's going to be an excellent club player, into there's something a bit more. How do you rate it this season from him, Harry?
Yeah, if the last two, maybe 3 years, he's been Ospreys' best player alongside Jack Morgan. Everything he does, his quality, his breakdown work, especially under pressure, has really impressed me this season. Against Montpellier, he was ridiculously good. When the pressure came on, it seemed like all those Osprey players were waiting for him to make that big impact when Montpellier got anywhere near their final third. Yeah, I like him in the loose as well. I think he's got a few strings to his bow, he's really kicking on now. I think he's had a good few seasons, but now he's really showing that star quality.
Will that be enough to get him in either Gatland's squad or our squad, Murph?
I think he could make Gatland's squad, but Pivac never bothered with him. He went Josh McLeod. Josh McLeod, I haven't seen much of him since the autumn. I've seen him in the Scarlet side.
I don't think he's been properly fit.
Again,
he went off injured in the first game. He was back, didn't he?
So I think you're going to go Faletau when Moriarty is back up if you're not picking Josh McLeod. And then you probably got three open sides. So you unless you decide to go...
Arguably four?
Well, go on.
Jack Morgan, Tommy Reffel, Justin Tipperick, Thomas Young.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You've got to mention all of them. I wouldn't have all of them in my squad, no. But you've got to mention
I think
them.
He's going to pick three, though, and I think Thomas Young will miss out. You know, again, there's another argument. But Tipperick's under pressure because he is being outperformed by Reffel and by Jack Morgan as a seven. At the moment, they have quite often have Jack Morgan and Tipperick on the pitch at the same time. But is that big enough at international level? Are you going to push Moriarty or Schunzer out of the side just to get these fantastic open sides on the pitch? I don't think it works. And so you could argue Tipperick, although he's at the end of his days, obviously, but he is so effective and so experienced. But he is, at club level, he is the one behind Jack Morgan and behind Tommy Raffle, for my money.
Interesting. What would you be tempted to do here, Harry? You know, how many of these sevens do you want to get into the squad? Because if it's me, Jack Morgan has to be there. He's proven at international level now, I think, over the autumn. And I think he's got loads more to give as well. So for me, he's definitely got to be in there. I think Reffel has to be in there as well. And then I would probably be tempted to have Tipperick in there as another one. And then someone covering either six or eight. So either Morgan Morris or, I don't know, maybe Wainwright. I'm not sure yet. What would you be tempted to do with these back row spots?
Yeah, I think you'd have to put Jack Morgan in and Raffel. I think they've shown their quality, especially at international level now, and you really need to let them flourish, gain experience. I think I possibly would have sided with Murph with Tipperick, but the last few weeks in the Welsh derbies, I think he's been phenomenal, and he played well in Europe, and he's a test match animal. So I think he'll keep in his plans until the World Cup, I believe. So I'd have them three as my open sides, possibly. And then personally, I'd have Morgan Morris in there as cover.
Okay.
Just quickly on Tipperick, he probably gets in on his line-out presence because he's always unmarked in the line-out, and he probably is the main line-out target for Wales over the last, when he's been fit in the last 12 months. They throw it to him more than anyone else, I think. So he probably gets in on that basis. And I got a real preference over Martin Morris or Wainwright. I think Martin Morris is...
Morgan.
Oh, yeah. His dad, Martin, Morgan Morris, is been playing better this year. So I think Wainwright is more of a genuine six if he moves across. So I'll go with whatever you two decide.
We're always talking about how we're struggling at eight, and I think we've got an inform eight. Let's pick him. You know, it's so unfair on, you know, Thomas Young isn't even getting a look in for me, and I think he's been absolutely outstanding this season. But you can't just have sevens ever. You know, if you're picking the football side, you wouldn't have six goalkeepers in the squad just because you could. Mm. So for me, it's really unfortunate. I think he just misses out.
Special mention, Carwin Tuipulotu. I don't think he's done it often enough to merit being in the squad. But if he keeps going like he did on Saturday, I think we've got a long-term successor to Taulupe there.
I would absolutely love that to be the case as well. There'd be something really beautiful about a Welsh Tongan taking on the mantle of arguably the best number eight we've ever had. I'd absolutely love to see that. I think let's draw a line under this one then for this squad section. Let's go with Morgan Morris, I would say.
Yeah, it's the form pick.
I think that's only fair. Right, halfbacks. We discussed a lot of this last week. For me, Williams, Webb, Blacker at nine.
Agreed.
Harry?
I'd be tempted to put in Reuben Morgan Williams. Not to start or anything, but he's another attacking option at 10. Because I think if you've got, I think Black has been more involved this season than Hardy. I do feel like he can do that job well. But yeah, it depends what they want from the nine, really. Whether they want to stick or twist with the attack game, or whether they want someone that's more controlling.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when it comes to that, if we're looking at, I think Williams and Webb are the two who have to be in there. Webb on form, and you know the fact that he's, we know when he plays at his best, he's, you know, he's an international, if not world class performer. Thomas Williams, you know, is the incumbent, and again, it's just, you know, we've seen glimpses of it at international level, but I think if he can translate a bit more of those special touches at club level, then we've got another really exciting nine. For me, I think you need a threat at nine. Hardy's not had a particularly good season. Gareth Davis has very much gone off the boil. Rodri Williams, while he's important at the Dragons, I think it's a big step up at this point in his career. Black is the one for me that I think has shown more than Reuben Morgan Williams. What do you reckon, Murph?
Yeah, interesting on Kieran Hardy. I think actually when he's been on the pitch for Wales in the last 12 months, he's played well at times. At South Africa, he was good.
His best rugby has been for Wales.
And the problem is when he's playing for his region, he's an international line and he should be able to kind of lift his team. He doesn't seem... He looks a little bit clueless when he plays for his club sometimes. And that is why it's not based on Kieran Hardy's performances in the Welsh years. It's his club performances. He should be going back and finding regional rugby easier, if that makes any sense. And Rhys Webb does make it look easy sometimes. You know, he's 30 bloody whatever, nine or whatever he is. And he's scoring from outside the opposition 22. He's scoring, you know, fairly... His legs are not what they were, obviously, but he's still scoring 20, 30-yard tries. He did it in Europe, I think. I can't remember the specific game, but he ended up under the posts against someone.
Leicester, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and that's... You just haven't seen that for his club from Kieran Hardy. You just haven't seen it. So we know PVAC didn't want to know Webb, and even before PVAC, Rhys Webb had been turfed out over the 60 cap rule in a controversial way. So we might still be unpopular with Gatland for all we know. But if this is our side, he's definitely, definitely in.
Okay, so that's Williams and Webb settled. Who would your third be, though, Murph?
Dane Blacker. I think he's been doing it over a longer, been playing well over a longer period of time than Reuben Morgan Williams has.
All right, so that's two votes for Blacker. So that's Williams, Webb, and Blacker. And then 10, as we said, is absolutely fascinating. Let's assume Dan Biggar is a shoe-in. After that, there's a lot of options, and no one really clear cut. Costello was there in the autumn. I think he's been good this season. And you know, he's very young. I think there's a lot to come. I'd like to see him in there. After that, though, you got Owen Williams. You got Jared Evans. You know, even part of me was thinking, Patchell putting together a performance like that and staying fit. That, you know, Gatland's a big admirer of him as well. We haven't mentioned Sheedy for a few weeks as well. I don't know quite where to go with it. Who would be in the picture for you, Harry?
For me, I've got down Biggar, obviously, Owen Williams, and Sam Costello. Absolutely love Costello. Owen Williams been fantastic. The Ospreys, I think he's been a huge difference for them, with them missing out on some key tens there. So yeah, there's that point. But I think he's good in those key areas. I think defensively he's excellent, but also you can use him as a second playmaking option at 12. So I think that's a big plus for him as well.
Murph, thoughts at 10? I know we seem to have been discussing this kind of every week since...
Yeah, I mentioned it last week, didn't I? Yeah. Well, I think the only cast iron one is Dan Biggar. Anyone else could be a bolter from there. Like Rhys Patchell. I think the reason why the Scarlets have turned around the last few weeks is Rhys Patchell, or one of the reasons. Dan Jones, he sometimes is a bit of a handbrake on his own back line when he's playing for the Scarlets, and Costello seems, to my own personal feeling, is that sometimes he can get put off his game if the opposition are up in his face a little bit like Jared Evans can, actually. So I think there's only one cast iron. If we're trying to predict what Gatland is going to pick, I think there's only one cast iron at the moment. But personally, I would like to take a gamble on Patchell's fitness. because when he's getting it right, he's I mean, he's a sideman. He's a fucking lump to bring down at any standard. And then I would probably go based on just how steady and an influence he's been since November. I go in Williams as my three, but I'm not sure that Gatland will take a gamble on Priestland on Patchell.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously a lot of it will come down to fitness, but he's a big admirer of him. You know, you cast your mind back to what would have been the start of 2018, and as Wales were trying to evolve into a more expansive side, Rhys Patchell had snuck in as first choice 10 at that point. Subsequently, Anscombe then kind of came in and took it when Patchell was injured. But I feel like if Patchell hadn't had such a run of injuries, he would definitely be in that Wales 23 on a regular basis. I agree on Costello. I think that Harry said, you know, I'm a big fan of his, and I think he's got a really, really bright future ahead. And I think Gatland will want to have a good look at him, see what he's made of, and he has got international experience now. I think bigger Costello and Owen Williams is probably the more sensible pick to allow Patchell to carry on playing and get more games under his belt, because it's been another stop-start season for him. That would be my three for that reason. If everyone's fully fit, Patchell is in there as second choice for me. But what about you, Harry?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I do like the Patchell shout. I think that would be quite good. But yeah, he hasn't played much this season. Still getting back to things. So yeah, I'd have to agree.
All right, let's go with the sensible approach, which I don't often do. Bigger, Costello and Owen Williams. Right then, centres. I suppose we're going to say four centres here.
This is hard.
Not as clear cut as it was. Again, I remember saying like kind of 6 months to a year ago, we didn't have many options here. We've got lots of options now. Who are the ones that have kind of caught your eye in recent times, Harry?
Well, yeah, as you said, 12 has been a big issue of late. I don't think anyone has actually put their name down really in that actual Welsh shirt. I think there's been good performances for their clubs, but I think this Six Nations is huge for that 12 shirt. I don't want to sound like an Osprey fan by year, but Kieran Williams has just been phenomenal. He's so exciting. Not the biggest, but that doesn't put him down at all. He's great in the contact area. The meters after contact is just quite something. Like his try against Montpellier, where he done a quick little step right to the last minute. He got so many variations. But I think against Leinster, what really impressed me was he was really taking it on himself to go as that first receiver. He was working really well with Ruben Morgan-Williams to try and spot those gaps, and he did get through. I think that forward pass was an absolutely beautiful angle. Gutted it was forward, sadly, for him. But, yeah, I think he's done really well, and I feel like he should get in there. Not too sure otherwise. And then probably Joe Hawkins. I think he's got everything to do with game. He's just getting experience now and really showing himself at that level.
Of the two, you feel like perhaps Kieran Williams is more of a Gatland-style player, Murph. You know, as you say, perhaps not the biggest, but he's still very, very physical and runs good lines. But Hawkins, again, is almost something that Gatland didn't have during his time in much more of a kind of a ball playing centre. You'll fancy both of these?
Apart from the brief window of Hadley Parks, who could do everything. That period just didn't last long enough for us. I think Joe Hawkins is getting picked on potential a lot. I don't think he's actually had that many great games for his region like Kieran Williams has. So I would agree with Kieran Williams. I think he's actually done it on the pitch rather than impress people behind the scenes kind of thing. But I, for that reason, I would still go with Nick Tompkins, because when he's going well, obviously he wasn't going well towards the end of the autumn, but when he's going well, he's the defensive leader in that side. So I think in the early stages of anyone taking over, they're going to go with some tried and tested people. Even if he's not first choice anymore, he's still going to be there. So that would be my two 12s. The thing I've raised with Kieran Hardy before, Kieran Williams before, is he, if you watch 30 seconds of his show, highlight reel, you will know everything that he does. There's, you know, the old Mad Nonu thing where he got into the New Zealand side, he's brilliant, and they said, if you're going to stay in this side, you're going to have to improve your passing and get a kicking game. Well, he, as effective as he is, Kieran Williams is one-dimensional, and so I think after maybe two or three international appearances, he will be analysed to death, and everyone will know what's happening every time he gets the ball. So he's going to have to, if he's going to be picked, which I want him to be picked, but if he's going to carry on and stay in the squad for any length of time and be picked regularly, he's going to have to add other aspects to his game. That's the only thing I would say about Kieran Hardy, Kieran Williams. But but he still I think merits being picked. The only challenger is unfit and is leaving the country. So from my point of view, from my tastes in 12, and that's Max Llewellyn. So I would go him and Nick Tompkins. I don't think you can go into the Six Nations with two novice 12s in the squad, in Joe Hawkins and Kieran Williams.
Okay, and then while we're talking Ospreys, we've got two other Ospreys to talk about in the centre berth, in Owen Watkin and George North as well. Gatland, you know, kind of flirted with North as a bit of a 13. He seems to be at international level anyway, like that's going to be his position going forward. Do you think Gatland will have the same opinion, Harry?
Yeah, definitely. He's playing there for the Ospreys now, and defensively he's really got that position now. I think he's impressed for a while at 13, I'd say. And maybe he was a bit quiet on the wing just before his move. And I think it's really revitalised his love for the game, and he seems to be enjoying his rugby again, getting on the ball, making those big tackles. And yeah, I think 13 is where he will be. Elsewhere at 13, I'd like to see, I think he's a Warren Gatland player, is Mason Grady.
There's 6'7" worth of Warren Gatland style player there, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And not even that, his attacking ability, his athleticism. I remember him at Wales under 20s at 15. He's taking high balls like it was nothing. And yeah, I'm really excited by him. He looks a fantastic prospect.
Interesting. I mean, I think I agree with everything that you've both just said there. I don't think we're any closer to making any decision on here. I think the key point you said there, Murph, though, is that you're right, you're going to need experience in that. I think the most exciting prospects are the younger players. I'm really excited by Hawkins. I'm really excited by Llewellyn and Grady as well. I feel like you've got to go. Obviously, North is going to be in there. I feel like you've got to go with Watkin as well, if I'm honest. I know Gatland's a fan of his, and he played his best rugby, I think, really, when he's being coached by Warren Gatland. I think he'll go back to that. I've said before, I don't know what my problem with Nick Tompkins is, but for some reason there is a problem there. I think it's it's occasionally this kind of running down dead ends, which sometimes it can be a 40 meter break, and it's, you know, it's massive, but other times it can look like it's a dead end. And I'm just torn as to whether that fits into Gatland's game plan, or whether Gatland will see him as someone who can't quite fit the structure as much. But then, you know, he's a pick for Saracens, and they're a very structured side as well. So I don't know. I would be tempted to load it with inexperienced picks, but that's not the right thing to do.
I don't think definitely, if you're going to pick Mason Grady, you want Owen Watkin, I know, but if you were picking Mason Grady, I'd be very worried about having Kieran Williams and Joe Hawkins as well, because then your most experienced centre is a converted winger. So yeah, I think he sometimes is quite conservative with his selections, Gatland, or he was when he was with us. So I can see him going with quite a few tried and tested people, and then having some, maybe the odd bolter in the squad. But I can't see them all being thrown into frontline games together. So I think he might. He's a guy who liked Owen Watkin in his time as coach. So I think he'll be get selected at outside centre with George North, myself. And that's also what I would go with. Mason Grady, I think he's willed at his feet, really, in a way, rugby-wise. But I think at the moment, the fact that he's not starting all the time like Max Llewellyn was before he got injured suggests that, Ray Lilo is picked ahead of him a lot, suggests that they think he's not quite there yet. Cardiff think he's not quite there. And so I would say after...
All right, let's rule that, Grady.
Yeah, so after the World Cup, he's going to have his chance, I would say.
Okay, so after all that, we go in. North, Watkin, and then what? Tompkins and Kieran Williams?
That's my choice. I don't want to overrule everyone.
Harry?
Yeah,
I'm going to have to go with you, Murph, because I've lost track of who I even want in the side now.
I was kind of second guessing Gatland a bit, but it is also what I would choose because of the inexperience, too many inexperienced players in the centre at one time.
Fair enough. All right. Well, you happy to go with that as a four then, Harry?
Yeah, I think if you lose Joe Hawkins, you possibly got Owen Williams, who can be a ball playing 12. And I think with Kieran Williams and Nick Tompkins, I think Nick Tompkins has those extra strings to his bow compared to Kieran Williams. I think that's probably the best way forward.
All right, okay then. That just leaves the back three. So if we're saying, right, what, five players in the back three, we're assuming, as we said earlier, Liam Williams will be all right. You'd have to say he'll come back in as first choice 15, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think he. The only challenge, I mean, Lee Halfpenny was back in matches over the Christmas period as well and looks fine, but he's not the attacking threat he used to be.
He seemed to want to counter a lot more on Saturday, I thought. He countered a lot more than he usually does. I don't know if he was, if he's trying to show he's still got that side to his game, which, perhaps has been a bit quieter in recent terms. But to me, it definitely seemed to be a bit less kicking. But I mean, they'll be the two 15s, won't they?
Yeah, probably. But I would say, my opinion, I think the closest challenger now to Liam Williams at 15 is Josh Adams. Because it turns into a quite a long-standing concussion and he's unavailable for the first couple of games. I think the back three would be Lurie, Samet, Rio Dyer and Josh Adams in the middle. Because that is a properly threatening back three you don't want to kick loose to. Whereas if you put Lee Halfpenny in, you've got all the qualities we associate with him, not least his goal kicking, but not nowhere near the same threat if you kick loose. So I think Josh Adams, he only had a couple of games, I think, for Cardiff at 15 over Christmas or over December or something, and he looked really threatening every time he had the ball. So I would say he's the second choice 15 in Wales at the moment.
Would you? I think again. He was good. He was good for Cardiff there. I still just think it's a big step up at international level in terms of that positioning stuff. And Halfpenny does that better than anyone. Mm. But you're right. You don't get that counter attacking threat. However, if you've got Josh Adams and then Dyer or Rhys Samet to either side of you, I think you can kind of maybe afford to have someone who is. A more positionally and kicking orientated 15 with the threats outside. What's your thoughts on that, Harry?
I was thinking possibly Liam Williams and Halfpenny. Just I tried and tested. He got the kick in as well in case. But What are you, I probably wouldn't say put him in the squad, but what are you two thinking about Ben Thomas? Because he's got that brilliant kicking game. He's really impressed this season at 15. Can slot in at 12, but I think a lot of people see him at that 15 position, maybe. I don't know what your thoughts are with that.
I really like Ben Thomas. I've actually been impressed with how he's slotted into 15. He had a good game at 12 at the weekend, it has to be said, and set that try up for Adams. You know, it's his kicking game and his ability to read. Wouldn't make this squad for me. I think I'd like to see him, you know, perhaps do it on a development tour or, you know, the dreaded kind of fourth international in the autumn, a bit more at international level, I think. So, he's such an exciting prospect when he first started playing. Then you have that you know, bit of an interrupted by injury type thing. I think the best thing for him again is to carry on playing rugby and for them to figure out what his best position is. I don't know what you think, Murph.
Yeah, it's interesting. Shout. I think it was Ben Thomas who did the crossfield kick for Josh Adams' try this week, wasn't it? Yeah. And also when he was covering Ian Williams at fullback, there was some amazing 50-22 attempts by him as well, which some of which came off. So, yeah, he's got that string to his bow. And I think it's one of the major differences this year to last year is Ben Thomas being used at 15 instead of Nipper. If Halfpenny wasn't fit, I think he would be an interesting shout. But I think just the security that Halfpenny gives you with the long range penalties and everything else, you know, he probably gets a nod. But that's the type of long shot selection that Daniel Killick would be all in favour of. He would. I can just, you know. Put him in, chuck him in, just chuck him in. I like the thinking there, but I think it might be if Ben Thomas was a bulkier bloke, I think he would already be in the squad as a 12. But if you remember the Ospreys game on New Year's Day, they were trying to run down that 10-12 channel all the time because it was Jared and Ben Thomas in that position. So, you know, even if you had a strong defensive 10, like a bigger alongside him, is still attractive for the likes of nearly every side. The French and the Irish would be looking. But he's probably, I don't know, 10 kilos maybe away from being an international, a properly ball-playing international 12. So 15 might be his future if he's going to be an international, but maybe he needs to be there every week for that to come off.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think you put it better than I did. But yeah, you know, interesting prospect. So with that in mind, Liam Williams, Lee Halfpenny as your kind of your out and out fullbacks, Josh Adams, Rio Dyer, Lewis Rees-Sammet. That's it. And I mean, I know there's a slight fitness concern over the Rees-Sammet, isn't there?
I think Josh Adams is carrying a problem with his knee as well.
Do you?
Yeah, he's heavily strapped and he's not. The try he scored on New Year's Day with the crossfield kick, he seemed to be running at half stride length. He's choppy stride. And I think there's an issue there, either knee or hamstring, which he's carrying through the season. So it could end up being Rio, Rees-Sammet and Liam Williams as a back three.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, no shortage of gas there though. And again, in a disappointing Dragons performance on Friday night, he seems to surprise himself with his strength. I think we all know how quick he is, but I don't know if it's just because he kind of changes the point of contact as he's going into tackle and he's approaching contact. But he bursts past so many players, and I don't know if they're looking at him thinking, he's a bit. You know, he's not the biggest, but he beats players so easily, and I think he's such an exciting player. You know, I said when he was selected in the autumn, I thought, you know, he's raw, and perhaps it was maybe a bit too soon, and I'm definitely wrong on that. I think he looks every inch an international player to me, and he's just so exciting. So yeah, it's good to have some genuine gas in the back three, and Josh Adams just continues to impress and score tries. If that squad's named or anything close to that, I'd be quite happy. I think we've done a half decent job there, fellas.
Do you think there'll be any real shocks in Gatland's squad that we haven't anticipated?
Well, not now you've suggested the ending of Ken Owens and Alwyn Jones' career.
And even Tips.
Yeah, and Tips. God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, swinging the axe. Not now you've covered all those eventualities. Will there be any surprises? I think it will be a slightly more ambitious side than perhaps people are expecting. I think people will be expecting him to go back to all his tried and tested favourites. And I think there'll be a few, you know, the odd player or two in there that he'll be excited to watch. And I think what's perhaps more interesting is when he names his first 23. Like you say, I think it might be, you know, it might be there that you've got Dowie Lake starting and things like that that wasn't happening under Pivac. I think there might be the odd bowl call or two based on these players who he's not had an opportunity to see. Because although we think it's Gatland coming back, having just been away, he's been gone for three years now. And there are players, you know, like Lake and Shunza and Jenkins and, you know, even Rhys Sammet, who he's not seen, he's not had the opportunity to pick in a Wales shirt. What do you reckon, Harry? Surprises ahead or not?
Other than the ones we've sort of covered, it would be interesting that back three, really, with a few injuries about. So I don't know what he does there. I don't know how fit everyone is. But yeah, it may end up just being the three that you think it would be. So other than that, I think, it'll be interesting when he does announce it.
It will. And of course, that brings us to conclusion for this week. We'll be back next week to cover all of the comings and goings in Welsh rugby as we get ever closer to the Six Nations. So if you're not subscribed, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you've enjoyed it, leave us a review. Do that again wherever you get your podcasts. That always helps. But we will be back to chat rugby with you next. Oh, sponsors, of course. Sorry, before we go, if you're in need of waking up, then make sure you get your hands on some top quality coffee over at socoffeetrades.co.uk. I think I'm in need of one, judging by the way I've bungled through that last link. But all that remains to say is a big thanks to Harry, thanks to Murph, and thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back to chat rugby with you next week. Thanks for listening. Cheers, boys.
Well done, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.